What I thought we would do in this particular session or this part of the show is actually talk to you guys about what you saw at Build. Give us a debrief. Obviously, there was a lot of I keep looking onto the side there and make sure that you're still on the screen. There we are. Lots of exciting things happening at Build, lots of crazy announcements, and just a lot of excitement. All three of you guys were there. Tell me what it felt like. What did you, you know, what was that experience like?
Well, there's the great Oprah moment where everybody obviously got some kits. I actually, just to prove this is live, I just downloaded the app you were just talking about.
Yay!
There you go, right there. Great, fantastic.
Sorry, so yeah, you were saying things were other than the Oprah moment, of course. And of course, yeah. Us watching it over on this end, I'm watching Steve kind of go back and forth on the stage, and I'm like, okay, when is that moment coming? It's coming. And then, boom, he says it. I'm like, of course.
Actually, right. He didn't start.
100 gigs SkyDrive space.
Yeah, that's right. He didn't lead with the service. He read with the hobbyist card for the free space on SkyDrive.
But you totally knew that was coming, though. Like, you can't just go right into the surface. You have to
for a guy who says that, you know, I'm not much of a presenter, I haven't done this in years, he had a pretty good show up there. So
okay, so other than Steve B obviously doing his thing, you know, you guys were talking around with various different developers, and you were talking and you were going into the sessions. Give me an idea of what's new. Like, what should the viewers of the show kind of as they're either thinking about watching some of the Build sessions or just wanting to hear from you guys, what's exciting? What should we have taken away from Build?
We were just talking before the show about actually Windows 8 itself and the fact that you can actually go out and get it if you don't already have it. I mean, most people with MSDN will already have it, but go out in your neighborhood and go head to Best Buy and Future Shop and take a look at what they've got out there. And you might find some interesting devices. They're a bit hard to find, but they are out there, especially with touchscreens. I don't know why I'd ever buy a laptop now without a touchscreen for Windows 8.
Yeah, after having used the Surface for just not even a week yet here fully, how many times I find myself poking at my laptop monitor already, like when I'm trying to just move around even between different apps or whatever even Visual Studio and everything, I'm up here and I'm poking at my monitor and it doesn't do anything, obviously. I really wish it did.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I have my 19-month-old at home now just assumes that every Surface that – and not Microsoft Surface, like the actual textile Surface. Every Surface he touches should do something. You know, and he actually gets quite frustrated when he presses on things and things don't move or make noises or stuff like that. Now, what does Windows 8, though, present for – the developer? Like, what was the general consensus? Were the developers that were at Build, they kind of say like, yeah, whatever, it's just another thing to develop against, or is there actually something to explore here?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I was surprised by some of the, okay, so if you take a look at the various sessions that were going on, there was actually a nice little, you know, online system that could tell you when sessions were full. And some of the sessions that filled up surprised me greatly because they were dealing with I think what Windows 8 has done is it's brought some of the fundamental design concepts that started in WPF and continued in Silverlight a little bit more to the mainstream. Some of the colleagues I was with had a chance to sit in on WPF 4.5 session on that. And so that was one of the sessions that filled up 15 minutes before it started, which is fairly unusual. And one of the questions that was asked early on is, how many people here are writing applications in Windows Forms? And 80% of the people put their hand up. So what Windows 8 is going to do, I think, more than anything else, it's kind of the tipping point towards a design philosophy, like the XAML philosophy, if you wish, or even HTML5, but just simply the approach to designing applications that we kind of forget that it's not necessarily mainstream. It might be mainstream for us as individual professional developers, but for the vast majority of people doing development in Windows, it's not. And I think what Windows 8 will do more than almost anything else is it's going to make that kind of design sensibility much more commonplace among developers.
And as developers who are building on this new stack, we also have there's this reality that there's already The basically what's going to happen is in the next year, there will be about 400 million Windows devices shipping, and that will come with the new UI and the new paradigms for design. And if you want your app to fit in there, if you're not developing for enterprise, even in some cases, if you are doing line of business applications, you're going to want that experience to feel as natural as possible. Leverage the things that are available on the platform. And there's already 400 million they're projecting 400 million sales of Windows 8 devices. But more significant is the fact that there's already 600 million devices out there running Windows 7, which can upgrade to Windows 8 for, what is it, $40? So you've got a target market of maybe as big as a billion people. So as a developer, if you're looking to put your own app out there, if you're looking to kind of monetize something that you're doing out in this space, then this is a wonderful opportunity from that perspective.
The other thing that I think, another session that was also sold out, I was quite surprised, was actually the session on Microsoft accounts. It used to be Live ID. Right. That session was completely packed out, and I was like standing outside to get in there. So that's a session worth watching. About, I think it's called Microsoft accounts or Managing Microsoft accounts. And that was interesting because it shows you how the cloud is really getting pulled into almost everything we do now, and understanding how to tie into those accounts, make use of the services like SkyDrive and other live services is kind of key now to making an app that's engaging people. Because obviously the people that showed up to build were interested in that kind of topic, so it really is beginning to take hold. And the Azure services that are available now, especially some of the announcements and the new portal that's available, the HTML-based portal, really makes it very easy to get started in minutes, if not seconds.
And even to that end, you touched on it there with the Microsoft account, your portability of your app between different devices. I can start as the basic example that you would use is in Internet Explorer. If I fire up my browser and I start looking at something on my laptop, and I close my laptop and I pull out my Surface and I open IE, guess what page I'm on? It's where I left on my browser on my laptop, and that's a great experience, and it's very fluid and very natural for us to be able to move around like that. So your app being able to leverage that portability in the back end by pushing up state to the cloud and things like that, those are going to be critical, essential things for your app, and they're also very exciting to be able to develop with.
Now, we say all these things, though, and it sounds great, but here, if I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second, I'm going to be like, okay, so all of these things sound great, I want to add that functionality, but it sounds complicated. True or false?
I would have said not complicated so much as different. I mean, and it depends on exactly kind of the level, because we touched on about three or four different things through that right. conversation, right? I think the integration of Azure services into your application is not complicated, generally speaking. It's not more complicated than just simply doing a deployment, making it, the APIs are fairly reasonable. If you're coming from a Windows Forms background trying to write Windows 8 applications for touch, you're going to have a learning curve, okay? So I think a lot of it just depends on what part of the particular pieces we're talking about, exactly where you happen to sit in there, is whether or not it's going to be a steep learning curve or a shallow learning curve.
Absolutely. The key there, as you said, if you're coming from a platform or development methodology that does not include XAML right now, or I mean that's for a native app, I guess you could say, but then you have to make that switch over to the model binding or the element UI binding that you're not. If you're not already familiar with that, there will be some learning curve in order to move over to that. You do have the possibility to shift over and do an HTML.js app if you want to do that on Windows 8 as well. I prefer the XAML C# approach. And when it comes to actually kickstarting those projects that are cloud-enabled, that have authentication and server-side authorization and security events, CRUD operations that you can kind of manage and kind of filter on the fly via JavaScript as part of mobile services, there is a very low bar to get into it. And when you go and spin up a new Windows Azure Mobile Services service in the portal, you actually have the option to download fully working apps for Windows Store, Windows Phone 8, and iOS, and they're working on Android templates as well. So you can get, start to finish within 15 minutes, building up an app with a simple to-do app kind of thing out in the cloud, and then pulling down the clients, compiling them, and running them on actual devices. So there's very little friction there in getting started.
I think there's just lots of little pieces. It's that All the little pieces are quite simple on their own. It's just there's a bit of a jigsaw. That's the learning curve. I think it's understanding all the little pieces you can bring into play. And you can get started with just a simple app. Obviously, you can build an app that doesn't use the cloud and get started, learn the things you need to do to integrate with search and with settings on the Windows 8 platform, right, or Windows 8 or WinRT platform, and then you can start integrating with the cloud to be able to kind of roam your settings, connect to the cloud with your Microsoft account, and then connect to SkyDrive and other services beyond that.
Now, Colin, you've been doing Windows Phone applications forever, and now you're doing Windows 8 applications. And I know just from the sessions that I was watching from over here, you know, they were talking about portable classes and portability of the code and shared cores and stuff like that. What's your take on it as an actual developer working with that stuff? Is it as, I guess, doable, if you will, using those portable classes to get your applications on both platforms, or are we talking about double the work?
Well, there is this thing called the portable class library or portable class project you could have. I think since Visual Studio 2010, there was actually a download you could add to that, and now it's part of Visual Studio 2012. So you can actually build, especially if you're using the MVVM model, you can actually create yourself a class which is the view model and the model. That really just leaves you with the view to create on Windows Phone 8 and on Windows 8. You could also even take some of that code and use it still on Windows Phone 7. Some things have changed slightly in the background, so there are some platform-specific features, but there was also a great actual session, I wish I can remember which one it was, which actually talked about specifically that. If you look through the Channel 9 sessions, you'll find a session that talks about being able to create applications that run across both platforms. So it is realistic. The apps I'm building now for Phone and for Windows 8, I'm using the same core, a portable class, to do exactly that. So it's just if you have the right architecture, you can take advantage of that, what's in the tool set, for sure.
Yeah, and by the way, I think the architecture thing is probably the toughest part, because even if you're coming for an MVVM kind of world, making sure that you have the appropriate separation so that you don't have any UI pieces leaking into your view model, for example,
right,
is kind of an important thing to be able to do. Making sure that your model is not using things that won't cross from one to the other, like you're not, you know, don't bring Entity Framework into your model, kind of thing, because you don't find that on those on the platforms whether you want to be porting to. So I think your point about architecture is important if you're going to try and create things that are truly portable across the different environments.
Cool. And then as a segue, since we're, you know, the portable classes is a segue between Windows 8 and Windows Phone, let's actually talk about Windows Phone for a second with the new SDK that's out for Windows Phone 8 and development on that platform. From what you guys heard over at Build and obviously some of the excitement that was on the stage there, for developers who are currently doing Windows Phone 7 stuff, what's that experience going to be like switching over to now development on Windows Phone 8?
You know, the experience translates fairly well. There's if you were equipped and you're comfortable working in the Windows Phone 7 space, then this is going to be a fairly natural move to Windows Phone 8. But the nice thing is what some of the hardware that's now going to be considered standard on the Windows Phone 8 platform, or what's becoming available on the Windows Phone 8 platform, what that now offers. So there are things that are. There's the
yeah. I was waiting for that. I'm like, are you gonna pull out the toys?
Here we go.
Do it.
I should have it already on there. There's the Canadian developer app running there as
Let's see it. Very nice.
There we go. But from a phone and SDK perspective, I got to dive into it. There was a hackathon going on at Build, and so I went and took part in that, and we built out a Windows Phone 8 app, and it was great. Like we got to play a little bit with some of the NFC stuff while we were there. Nokia was handing out $1 programmable NFC chips that you can get, and there's really neat things that you can start to do with your phone, like put one of these NFC tags on your dashboard in your car and have it a deep link into, say, your Maps application on your phone. So you get in your car, you sit down, and you touch your phone, and then the Maps app pulls up. So there's really cool things that you can start to do. And these are like basic stripped-down examples that they're coming up with on the first run. It gets to be more exciting when people start thinking about things like geolocation and the live tiles kind of updates that they've got, and then the NFC stuff, and you start putting those together in interesting ways. There's lenses and the wallet, of course, in-app purchases. So there's all kinds of really cool things that have been added to the slate for us as developers.
Okay, so now I have to ask you, just because, you know, we're talking about apps, we're talking about Windows Phone, we're talking about Windows 8. Now, James, you're an ASP.NET guy,
yeah.
And I mean, that's your favorite. Scott Hanselman's session on day three? Yeah, I think it was day three or day four, on, you know, the web being the new operating system and, you know, JavaScript taking over the world and basically all of these apps living in browsers. What's your take?
Well, we have to watch how we watch Scott Hanselman. He speaks in hyperbole sometimes. So I would say that, you know, JavaScript is not necessarily taking over the entire development landscape, but he does make some very valid points in that there's a lot more power in the browser than we're giving credit for, and I think that will enable developers to leverage more of the hardware from within the browser, and therefore, and I mean, we've got JavaScript running closer to the hardware now anyways, with like Node.js running server-side and things like that as well. So there's some truth in it, I see myself, you know, making money on C# for the next decade anyways.
I was just going to say, I'm like, you know, I was watching it and it was a great session. I always love watching him. But I'm just like, man, I just like, and don't get me wrong, the tooling, what they've done with Visual Studio to support all the web standards, fantastic. But I don't know. I'm a XAML C# guy. I can't help it. Or like I'm a, you know, an ASP.NET and C# guy. I've tried it, but it just doesn't work for me.
I think I have to say I definitely come into the XAML snob category a little bit there. But having said that, when I saw the session on TypeScript, I have to say I was thinking, wow. Well, this is .NET programming on top of JavaScript, really. It was awesome. I think everybody really should pay attention to that session because it does allow people to go, oh, I don't like all that JavaScript-y messy stuff. TypeScript is built for you to be able to write proper enterprise-scale apps or proper full-size apps because you can bring type checking and all kinds of great things into on top of JavaScript. It's very new, but just the awesome thing is that the interpreter, I'll call it, not compiler, the interpreter for TypeScript actually is written in TypeScript. And you can take all your JavaScript, put it in the TypeScript editor, and it will just work there. You can start tagging things with types, and all of a sudden the whole thing lights up in terms of squigglies telling you where everything is right and wrong just in a few seconds. So it really starts bringing type, you know, .NET style programming to JavaScript, and I think more people will consider that. In fact, I heard people in other sessions going, can we have TypeScript in this? Like I was in the Office developer session, where now you can write HTML JavaScript-based apps for Office products that work on the web version and the native client versions, and people going, oh, yeah, that's nice, but can we use TypeScript in this? Because they're .NET developers, and they don't want to have to jump right into JavaScript at the deep end.
And so, by the way, just the answer to that question is yes, you can. Because the SharePoint and Office development apps are just simply web apps. What I find also kind of cool about the TypeScript stuff is there's no performance hit. It's a development tool. The stuff all disappears when you actually deploy your application. So it's you know, compile time checking, if you want to call it that, for lack of anything else. It's a tool that helps the tools, as you say, light up. But it doesn't make your code slower. It doesn't. It's not bloatware. It doesn't change things down. And honestly, I think this is there's been a huge renaissance in JavaScript over the last year and a half, where people in the Microsoft world in particular have all of a sudden going, well, you know, maybe we can actually create enterprise-level apps using JavaScript at some level.
Right, and the really neat thing, and you guys have both mentioned it here, but is that it just ends in JavaScript, right? So you get this strict typing, this layer over top of it, which is only for tools. But as Bruce mentioned, when you're done, at the end of the day, all that stuff removes itself from the picture. But what that enables from a web perspective, and if you get excited about this stuff, is it pre-minifies and it exports your JS for you, which means you've got that assets type approach that you have over in the Ruby on Rails world, for example. And now I can start putting my JavaScript, my enterprise quality JavaScript with compile time checking and things like that, and IntelliSense as I'm working with my objects out of JavaScript. And then I get to get real JavaScript, which works in every browser, and I can put it out on a CDN, for example, and I can package it up in those ways. So that's really exciting. And as far as, you know, having that transition over into other things, one of the other great surprises for me was the announcement of moving SignalR over into the ASP.NET brand. And that is great because now it's, you know, like they said, that you got support for it now. But the real great thing about that is just the awareness, because SignalR, while a lot of the demos really start with the simple things like chat or like the really simple versions of games and things like that, those are all great. But there's a lot of applications that could, business applications that can make use of real-time signaling between client-server and client-to-client. So you've got this wonderful asynchronous pub-sub library that's built there, and it's easy to tackle things like concurrency and things like that. They are working on, this cross-boundary thing or whatever, they're working on exporting all of the library symbols from that come out of the dynamic compiled SignalR server-side code, and they're going to be exposing TypeScript symbols for you, so you're going to be able to leverage that as well. So you're already seeing these things happen, and this is going to be where things get real fun for developers.
I think the thing with TypeScript, just to put it in context, if you were a developer who ever started with C++ or C, TypeScript is to JavaScript like the C++ preprocessor was to C, in my mind, in the sense that it's not a compiler. What it does is it takes what's there, and C++, the C++ preprocessor, before there was a C++ compiler, had the ability to take C++ written and convert it into C underneath. So, the C++ just dissolved away and created all the VTable stuff for you. It's the same thing here. You take your TypeScript and you compile it again to JavaScript. So it's pretty awesome. And as James was saying, they've exposed like the jQuery library. They've made a metadata file for the jQuery library and the jQuery UI library. So all of that stuff just lights up with proper type safety inside the editor. I mean, it's got a long way to go before it's part of Visual Studio, and there is a Visual Studio plugin you can download right now as well. And the SignalR, again, that's amazing stuff as well. Think about when Outlook Web Access first came out and you had this ability to say, hey, you've got a new email, and you didn't have to refresh the page. It's something as simple as that SignalR gives you, the ability to broadcast back or push to the browser or a Windows 8 app and shortly a Windows Phone 8 app. There's something for you to go and check, or a full kind of load of information that can then be updated in real time pretty much on the user's display.
So you guys were talking about C++, and Tiny Tootster here puts into the chat about the crazy new interest in C++. What was that like? Were a lot of developers talking about doing stuff in C++?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they were. I had a chance to hang with Kate Gregory for a while, which is, pretty much my hook into the C++ world. And revived interest in it. There was a lot of the sessions were all very well attended. There was just a lot of conversation about being able to do native stuff with C++ on a Windows Phone 8, Windows 8 platform. It was I want to say, if there was something that was kind of because if I'm not mistaken, XN8 was not ported over to Windows Phone 8, or at least it hasn't been yet. The fact that they could actually do game development using the C++ libraries on Phone 8 made a lot of people who were working in that kind of market quite happy.
Yeah. I think that brings some of that serious game studio game publishing to those platforms as well.
Yeah, especially with the big game engines like the physics engines and whatnot moving over. Unity's over there as well. Yeah. They've got a refreshed IDE that targets multiple platforms, including Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. So Bruce, maybe you had a different feel for that, but what I found was the people there that were interested in the C++ stuff, they're probably looking at doing something that was graphics motivated. Was kind of the theme for those who were chasing the C++ sessions.
Yeah, also just people that were coming from different platforms. I spoke to a number of people who were, iOS, Android developers, and to them, the idea that they can do their stuff in C++ was, well, especially from the iOS side, that was a big, that was a big reason for their interest, because for them, that's the language.
And the other thing to bear in mind is the idea of the Windows 8 is that C++ developers, HTML, JavaScript developers, and .NET developers can all come to the party and play on top of the WinRT libraries. But the other thing you can do is you can mix and match. You can take, there are occasionally some things that you need to do in C++, very rarely when you want to do something intense with graphics or with DirectX, and you can have a DirectX C++ library either that you build or somebody else builds, and you can make that look like another library to a WinRT program. So your VB or C# app can actually use a C++ component inside, and that can be distributed to the store and work on a Windows RT or Windows 8 machine. So you've got a lot of flexibility in how you build the apps.
Okay, we're starting to actually get some questions on the live chat here, which is great. Thanks for putting those in there. There was one question in here that I have to ask you. I was thinking about it as well, but what was it like to be in the tent? And actually, before you answer that, it was originally came from a note on here in the chat was the tent at Build something that I should buy for my next camping trip?
Not if you need to heat it.
Well, there are actually three tents on campus. There was the main keynote tent, and there were two kind of meal service tents. And I think that even though the keynote tent was taller than the meal service tent was actually longer than the other one. So we spent a lot of time in tents and walking through tents and with umbrellas and things like that. But when we walked into the tent on the keynote tent on day one, there was a guy, I don't remember his name, but he was playing stuff on Windows 8 apps that he built. He was a performance artist. Does anybody remember his name?
He was actually the keyboardist for a group called the Dream Theater, if I recall. I don't remember his name, but he was the Dream. If you look up the Dream Theater and look at the keyboardist, you'll find him.
I think it was Jordan something or other.
Yeah, but that was a fantastic kind of ambiance as we walked into the tent there and sat down for the keynote. So I think that combined with, the large screens, the Steve Ballmer presence, and all the usual people being rolled out on stage, I think it created a fantastic environment. And I looked at the keynote, I can see myself clapping at least in three different places as the camera rolls by.
I found the tent is kind of from a size perspective, that is probably the conference that is right at the edge of being too big to be held on campus.
Oh, I think we lost you there, Bruce. We can't hear you.
Okay, well, hold on. Try that.
There we go.
That's much better. What I was saying is that I think that if you take a look at the logistics of the event, that was probably right at the very limit of what can be held on campus. I think I saw the sun for about an hour and a half for the entire week I was there. Right, and it was drizzling most of the time. And there's a lot of trudging back and forth between tents and meals and conference rooms and
Wait! Did you say raining in Seattle?
Yeah,
or in Redmond, I should say.
Hard to believe it was raining in Seattle. I've been in Seattle and I've seen it not rain. This was just it was fairly constant throughout the entire week.
I can honestly say that every time I go out there, it's nice and sunny. But maybe it's just I bring it with me. I don't know. anyway, guys, a couple of other questions for you. Actually, Tiny Tootster, thanks for putting that into the chat. His name was Jordan Rudis. I think that's how you say it. Anyways, thanks for that. There's a question in the chat about whether there was any talk about how they're going to increase market share with Windows Phone now that the new platform is out, and if you guys had any thoughts on that.
I think there was, because I think Steve Ballmer did a really great job in the keynote. It's almost like you need him on TV or on CNN or somewhere else saying the same message, because the message he delivered, he pretty much said, once you get a Windows 8 device, like a Surface or any Windows 8 device, you will get the best experience on Windows Phone 8. So I think that Windows 8 will kind of drag along Windows Phone 8 into the prime time far more than it's ever been done before.
And that's actually something I've heard mentioned a couple of times now, where it's kind of like the phone will pick up as a result of Windows 8. Is it like, are you guys, is that the general consensus, or is that just something that we're kind of hopeful that will happen?
I think his quote was pretty much, if you want the best mobile experience as a companion to Windows 8, you're going to get a Windows phone. And so to say that this is going to build and ramp up adoption of Windows Phone 8, I think that's actually pretty accurate at this point.
Colin, you were going to say?
I'll have to tell you, so I just brought home a Surface, and one of my kids just got a phone, a Windows phone, strangely enough, and he's just got his Xbox Live account, and the fact that it all lights up everywhere means that you can just go on, play a game here, and all your Xbox Live stats come together. So just that one thing is enough that makes it engaging to have the Windows experience on each of those devices.
Yeah, and it's actually fascinating too. I mean, I see even with the younger generation, if you will. Now I say that, and anyway, we're not going to go there. Bruce and I tend to have interesting conversations when it comes to things when I say younger generation. But, you know, I see...
Thanks for that.
you know, I see my niece and my nephews and stuff like that as they're coming up. And they're coming up on, you know, my niece is 11 and my nephews are 9 and 8. And they have these devices now, obviously, right? You would assume that. But they have these devices and they're playing around with them. And to them, it's actually... almost like, well, how would I not have this on my next device that I'm going to? Whereas for some of us, it's kind of like, wow, this is a really cool thing that they added into the platform. So I'm interested to see actually how this is going to roll out, if you will, even as, obviously with us for sure. But I'm curious to see what it's going to be like with the next generation of users.
And if you're wondering if they have the clout to do it, like, I mean, let's look back at the Xbox coming online, the original Xbox, and Microsoft was called crazy because there was Sega, there was Nintendo, and there was Sony there, and they were the market. Who needs a fourth player? Fast forward to today, and it's the leading console worldwide with the highest attach rate for sell-through games. So there's, I mean, Microsoft, if they decide to put their marketing muscle behind it, and I mean, Steve, I think, was saying in the, Steve Ballmer was saying in the keynote that they're doing that. So if they decide to get behind it with their marketing clout, then I think it can happen.
There's another great demo just to integrate devices together where they took a Surface and they plugged an Xbox for Windows controller, a wired controller, into the Surface device, then plugged the Surface into the TV with HDMI. And that's another thing that will bring, I think, children along, and the idea that they can sit there and play on this device and play on the big screen just from that device. And they don't need to be playing Halo or some intense graphics experience, especially if they're younger, but they can take all those Xbox Live arcade games and play on those. So I think that really brings the ecosystem of devices together as well.
Cool. Actually, Nat, you mentioned Halo. FYI, in case you guys missed out on the announcements, but Halo 4 came out yesterday. That was kind of fun. I see that in the Twitters and Facebook going crazy about, oh, you know, I took all this time off of work because I got to go play. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's great to have Master Chief back.
I had the Halo 2 flu back in the day.
Nice. Nice. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. We are actually, we have to go talk to Thomas just before we end off the show. Pleasure having you guys. I think it was really fun reliving, if you will, that week. Because and I'm sure you guys would agree, but it went by really fast. Yeah. Anyway, so thanks again. We'll see you guys next time.